Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Mischief Makers podcast. I'm Charlie Russell and today I have the joy of speaking to Fred Gray, actor, director, dad, all-time great person. Hello.
Hello.
Oh, this is so exciting. Okay, now we'll start with telling the listeners a little bit about you. Currently, you are the associate director on Peter Pan Goes Wrong. That's right?
Yes.
Brilliant. But let's go back to the Fred Gray origin story because it's pretty cool. You went to RADA?
Went to RADA.
With?
With the one and only Harry Kershaw.
He is the one and only. He really is. He's the best. And you met him there?
I met him there. We got on like a house on fire. And the way that I got into Mischief, which was 9-10 years ago now, which is madness.
It was, well, the first thing you did was Peter Pan with us?
Peter Pan, no, it was the Peter Pan tour, the UK tour.
That's right, yeah.
And I think you guys, obviously you did it at the Pleasance.
We'd done the Pleasance in 2013.
And I remember I went to see it and I lost my mind. I went to see it to see Harry in this show called Peter Pan Goes Wrong. And I remember sitting there just being like, I hadn't seen Play That Goes Wrong. I didn't really know anything about Mischief at the time. And I remember the bed drops.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was crying. I was absolutely beside myself. And I said to Harry afterwards, I need to do this. Like, I need to be in this. It's the first thing I'd seen for ages where I was like, I need to somehow be involved in this show.
Wow.
And maybe Harry held on to that because then maybe 6 months later, you guys said to each other that you could bring in two people each to audition for the show, for the UK tour. And I was one of Harry's picks to come in and audition. And I got the understudy. And that was a big thing because I was like, I've never understudied before, didn't know what that was.
Mm-hmm.
But I was so keen to be involved and obviously, like, one of the best decision in terms of my career that I've ever made because of the sort of step that went from then. And did that for 9 months. Flew Peter Pan. It's part of my job.
Oh, you were part of the flying
team.
Yeah.
Heavily dyspraxic, so a really bad, bad role for me to do. I remember there was...
Oh, perfect.
I was flying with a guy called Adrian, and we had like a flying system where we had like marks on the stage, but we did flags with LX tape.
Uh-huh.
So like we had like five guys. We had Nigeria. We had Colombia, and they would mark like using LX, different colors of LX.
Right.
And then, so if those two flags matched up on your two ropes, that was the right point. So you'd be like, okay, go to Colombia. And I remember on the second show, I just flew Peter Pan off
stage,
and I just had Adrian shouting at me in the darkness, "Go to Nigeria." Which is obviously a really weird.
What a strange...
It's a really weird moment. Because when does a man shout at you in the dark, go to Nigeria?
But that is a thing that happens, I think, in theatre where people don't. We come up with these words and phrases because sometimes, particularly with the Goes Wrong shows, we can't necessarily use the phrases you might use
right.
because of our meta level of it.
Yeah.
So you can't say stop the revolve, stop the show. Yes. Because, well, you do, and people have to not listen to that.
Yeah.
So we have to create these kind of commands that are slightly obscure. Because
cabbage.
Then, cabbage, for example. And then that means we know... we know actually that it's not improv and it's not within the story of the production.
And I mean, I knew exactly what he meant by go to Nigeria.
Yeah.
I just couldn't find the two Nigerian flags next to each other.
Oh.
So it took a while for him to come back in view of the audience. It was fine. Anyway, so then, so I did that for nine months.
I had no idea,
and then I did another show in Edinburgh Festival where I met my wife, Jamie Burkitt.
Oh.
Did a show called Saucy Jack and the Space Vixens.
Which? Who is the original Saucy Jack?
Adam Megiddo.
Adam Megiddo, who is the director of Peter Pan Goes Wrong.
Yeah. And I only realised this maybe 4 years later.
Wow, really? You didn't know?
Yeah, no, not at all. Not at all. Had no clue.
So you'd already worked with Adam. Then you
worked with Adam.
And
yeah. And then it was just like, and they obviously had to bring down the song because Adam can hit notes that I can't. That's a thing that happened. I mean, I'm not a singer. I'm not a singer.
You've got a lovely voice.
It's okay. It's passable. I went to the first day of rehearsals for that and was like, I am out of my depth. but then I did that. And then Christmas was working with you guys. Coming back, they said, do you want to come back and understudy? Obviously, again, Pride then kicked in again. I was like, oh, I would have hoped to be bumped up. But why would I think that when it was you guys thinking that I could usurp? And it was a bit of a decision. I was like,
yeah.
But then I thought, you know, because I hadn't been seen by anyone, because you're out on tour, you're around the country, and you go on every now and again. I was like, no, I'm going to treat this as a sort of 3 month long audition.
Mm.
And then I was doing the show, and it was around the time Bank Robbery was going up, and Chris Leese was playing Trevor in The Play That Goes Wrong.
That's right. But then he'd moved to Peter Pan Goes Wrong in the West End.
That's right. And then they moved him from Play That Goes Wrong into Bank Robbery, which meant there was a Trevor spaced hole in Play That Goes Wrong, and they. Jono and Henry brought me into their dressing room and said, do you want to go over to Play That Goes Wrong? So the sort of the audition process worked.
It did.
It was long and it was hard. And then I was in Play That Goes Wrong for 2.5 years.
Yeah, because you did that, you finished that run with them, but then you stayed for another year, basically.
That's it. So I finished that contract, then I did Trevor for another year, and then I extended again, but not as Trevor. I went to play Jonathan.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right. And so you've actually done a couple of roles in Play That Goes Wrong. But how did you start doing directing with Pan?
Directing with Pan. So, because I'd spent so long with Play That Goes Wrong, when Mark Bell moved on, there was an associate director's position.
Mm.
And I'd obviously been in it for 2.5 years. And so I'd done some directing. I had a theatre company in Glasgow before I went to drama school. And I was like, I'm going to go for this.
Mm.
So I went in to interview for the position. And it went very well, but I didn't get that job. And then Adam Megiddo was going to Australia and New Zealand, and he said he wants
with
to bring
Peter Pan.
With Peter Pan, and he wanted to bring someone with him. And they said, on the strength of Fred's interview, why don't you bring Fred?
Oh, and because you knew the show as well, so that's even better.
Exactly. So I went and joined Adam in New Zealand on this show as an associate director, very much learning the show from that perspective. And that was 5 years ago, 6 years ago.
You two have been working together ever
working
since.
Together ever since, and it's you know, the dream is working together, like actually in the room together, but we've definitely worked separately. So I've done productions in Italy and Canada, obviously Australia, New Zealand. We did the UK tour together, but they were by my, I would go out without Adam. But the way it works is, in terms of being an associate director, is that Adam will always be the director.
I would never
get that credit, regardless of whether I do it. But like for this UK tour,
you're staging it.
Adam
you're
wasn't
it
involved
on.
In the casting or the rehearsals, but he will always be the director because I'm staging his show.
That's right. So actually, this brings me on to a question, because a few people have asked me who are maybe not in the industry. Oh, so what is an associate director and what's the difference? And why aren't you called the director if you directed that production? And I suppose I would say, like, a director is called a creative with a capital C when they come into a production at its inception or its how it begins. And so they get the credit for the original production.
Yeah.
And they will always get that because associates don't reimagine the show.
No.
Unless there's it's not even a replica production. You know, sometimes you have plays where they've existed for years and years and years, like a Shakespeare play. And then obviously the director who does it next is now just the director of that. It's not like every director since Shakespeare has been associate. Yeah. So now it help us all understand the role of an associate director.
Well, to be honest, my understanding of it is only through my experience of it. I don't know the world of an associate director because I've directed shows by myself before, and obviously that speaks for itself, directing it from like staging it for the first time, et cetera, et cetera. But I've only really been an associate for Mischief and for Adam. So
that might be different from standard associate position.
Yeah,
anyway.
And I think it depends. I imagine it depends from play to play and role to role. In terms, Adam's always been very, very good at giving me a lot of responsibility.
Oh, that's
In Australia, New Zealand, it was very. I said, can I just sit and watch you? And I respect Adam so much, and I learned so much working with him and just sort of sitting back. And then as the production went on through the weeks, he said, Fred, you do this, mm-hmm. get up and do this. And we developed such a wonderful relationship where I basically agree with him about everything. So it's not like, I think with other shows and talking to other actors, sometimes there's a difference between what the associate says and what the director says, and that can be quite confusing. And that's never really been the case with me and Adam. If I will obviously disagree with some decisions and say, oh, this moment I think maybe worked, and he will agree with me or he won't.
Yeah, you can have a conversation about it.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a classic thing, which he actually says to actors, but he uses it on me as well, which is if he doesn't agree with you, he goes, that's really interesting. Get back to me on that.
Yeah.
Always. And because I know that that's what he does with actors, and he tells me that's what he does.
It's really interesting. Come back to me on that.
When he does it to me, I'm like, Adam, you've told me your code. I know that means...
You've told me the code now.
I've told everyone the code.
You've told everyone the code.
Oh, you might have to edit this out.
Anyone who ever works with Adam Aguido again now can learn the code.
He owns it, though. He's people know, because he never does... Then no one ever comes back to him on that.
Well, that's the thing. I think, to be fair to Adam, if you really do disagree with him, like if you've got something you want to talk to him about, he is actually open to hearing
Absolutely.
It. And he's open to having his mind changed. When he's saying that, that's not, I'm shutting you out.
Absolutely.
But that's, I don't want to have this conversation right now in this room whilst we're trying to put on a show, which is totally valid.
Yeah.
And so but usually he is right, which is obviously... deeply frustrating.
Well, not
sometimes, but usually great, because if he's right, then he's doing the right thing.
If he's right, it's just like you know, when I went out to Italy to do it, when I went out to Canada to do it, obviously I didn't have Adam by my side, but I just know the show, and also because I'd been in the show for 9 months understudying, and I understudied five of the parts, I sort of know it from an actor's perspective. So Adam will be doing the sort of big picture stuff, and then I'll just sort of go on stage and whisper, it's better if you use your left hand there because of this. You know, it's like the little nitty gritty details of actually performing the parts. Also, you know, like characters like, all of them, but I mean specifically a character like Max, for example, 3-4 weeks into rehearsal can become very... confusing because you don't have any laughs anymore. You don't have nothing. You don't have anything to feed off, and you know, Max's fuel is the audience, and to not have the audience there, it's like I can then talk to them about that process and make them understand that it's all going to come alive and it's all going to be fine.
Yeah.
So performing it is a huge is a massive advantage, and me and Adam just work so well together.
That's really, really nice. Yeah. And I know from my friends who are directors and who have been associates that that's not always the case, and you just deal with it. You just keep going. I know that my housemate, friend and director, Katie Ann McDonough, would also, she finds that when she's doing associate work, she does a lot of the getting the understudies ready.
Sure. Yes.
That's
yes, of
a
course.
Big responsibility,
yeah, that was,
right?
That was in the last UK tour. That was my main job. And I was contracted to see the show every two. Once the rehearsals were done, Adam was done.
Yeah,
and then it was me on the, you know, every 2 weeks watching the show, noting
quality
the show
control,
and covering the understudies. And there has to be two covers for each part. And obviously with like a tour schedule and things, it's very, very tough because of how technical the show is as well, and also potentially dangerous. The show could be. It just takes a while. Just takes a lot longer.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. I mean, yeah. That, you know, as you've just said yourself, associate roles may differ. From show to show, but this has been your experience. And But also, you did just mention that you have obviously understudied on the show and been in the show. And in fact, on Broadway this year, when we went to Peter Pan Goes Wrong, went to New York this year, I was doing some podcasts whilst I was there. So if you want to check them out, do find them wherever you get your podcasts.
Good plug.
But you were actually also contracted as emergency cover, is that right?
Yes.
Whilst you were there at the beginning. That was the idea.
Yes, I was contracted and paid to be an emergency cover.
And whilst the other American understudies got ready.
Yeah, because I was flown out early to start with it, because that was my job on Broadway as well, to cover the understudies. Absolute, they're all amazing.
Oh my God, we were so lucky. And there is a specific episode where we interview at least, I think it's three of the understudies, and it was so nice.
They were just an absolute dream to work with. And I was officially an emergency cover because in the last UK tour, I was not officially a cover, but I went on.
Right.
Because people went down.
Yeah.
So I went on in Alexandra Palace. Well, I went on for 2.5 weeks as Max in the last UK tour.
Mm-hmm.
And because I know five of the parts, they obviously just utilised that, which was a smart move. Because probably what you're referencing is the
infamous.
Is the turn as Max on Broadway.
Well, your Broadway debut.
My Broadway debut, yes.
Yeah, so if anyone doesn't know this, we'll start from the beginning. We had, you had actually left...
Left
America,
to get
we
married.
Were done. You were getting married,
yeah.
We'll talk about that. That's exciting. But you were not in the United States, and there was a time on the run on Broadway, the Ethel Barrymore, where one by one cast members went down with COVID, and it so happened that it seemed to be the people, and then their direct understudy, and then their direct understudy would just go down with COVID to the point where I thought we were going to have to cancel some shows for the first time ever. We were just hanging on. And then I think it was Nancy that went down, which meant that a girl had to move from Trevor. The whole thing moved and we were a part short. And I thought, well, obviously we're going to have to cancel the show. And then we were told, no, we're not cancelling the show because Fred Gray is currently on a plane. He doesn't know this yet. He knows he's on a plane, to be fair, but he's aware of that. We haven't managed to con him that way. But he's on a plane coming to see us. And that was meant to be a surprise that you were coming to see us.
Partly a surprise. Well, I was updated with the situation with actors going down. We also had Ellie Kemper in. For that.
She was about to be coming
She had a rehearsal for the Thursday, and this is maybe on the Monday that I had this conversation. So they said, because of what's happening with the actors, can we get you out to direct Ellie Kemper, but also be there in the building in case this continues?
Did know that was a possibility.
That was a possibility. I wasn't completely blindsided, but it was, so I was like, great, so I'll go back out. I've been home for maybe 2.5 weeks. I was out there for 10 weeks with you guys, and then I came back and got married, and was sort of settling back into life away from Broadway. And I was delighted to come back because New York.
Awesome.
And I loved working with you guys. And I was like, and obviously meeting Ellie Kemper, massive fan of The Office. And she's she's the loveliest person I've ever met. I've ever met. I just think she's like out. Anyway, so I got on a plane. With it, with like 12 hours notice. So it was like I was on a Zoom call and they booked the flights and I was on the next morning. And then when I landed about 2 o'clock and I got about 100 WhatsApps just open at the airport. And I was like, you're on tonight, it's Max. And panic because I've sort of moved slowly but surely into directing. I still do act, but it's actually something I feel a bit weird about doing now because my brain is just tuned differently now. It's more about like lots of people and plate spinning. It's not just thinking about myself and what I'm doing. And all of a sudden I was in a taxi learning looking over. Like I know that I do know the show, but it's very different to watch someone else or different people play that part than do it yourself. It's got to be in your body, especially things like the dance.
Yeah.
Again, mentioned before, I'm heavily dyspraxic. So that was a thing of like, well, what a make-believe is going to happen. And plate hits are going to happen and all the things are going to happen. And got the thing at 2, obviously takes ages at the airport, long story short, got to the theatre at, what, five?
You got to the theatre at five. I know this.
Yeah, of course, because then you took me through the world of make-believe.
Yeah, because obviously Nancy would have done that, being the choreographer and dance captain, but she was off. She was down. And we had been doing emergency rehearsal to keep, I don't know, because someone else was moving across, so we were trying to get in as much emergency rehearsal as possible. But we had to, like, legally take a break. Yeah. The crew had to take a break. The crew had to take a break for half an hour, so they couldn't start till half five. But I spoke to the stage manager, and I was like, am I breaking any rules if I am on the stage going through something? And they said, no. And I said, and they were just like, don't touch anything. I was like, brilliant. I was like, so if, for example, I started at 5:15, just me and Fred, and they were like, yeah, please do that. And I was like, brilliant. So I remember meeting you at the cabin. I was like, you have 15 minutes.
Yeah.
If it's okay, if that's all right, can then we get on stage and we're going to just walk through my world of make-believe so that when everyone comes back off break, we are 15 minutes ahead of schedule. Yeah. Because at that point, 15 minutes felt very big. Like, I was like, we can do so much in that time.
Yeah.
It was such a precious...
And we did.
We did?
We did. It was very focused. I was obviously very confused and jet-lagged and excited. I mean, so it's important to say I wasn't like... I was like, oh my God, this is so cool. And I, because of back in the day, you know, with understudying 19 years ago, I genuinely feel that job set me up for the rest of my life insofar as I can do anything. Like because I went on rehearsals, we couldn't rehearse at all on that first tour because it was its first UK tour.
Mm.
And me and Laura only took understudies on that. We just had no time to rehearse. So when we went on, often it would be our first time doing anything, which is very weird. But because of that, I just feel like I can do anything. And here I am with this show that I've done. So, and I was just kind of like, yes, bring it on. And that evening, 7:30, just stepped out in a pink baby grow. I was just like,
Broadway
and also
baby.
The sort of max energy of just like, hey, how you
do
doing?
Do you think of all the parts you would have to do last minute?
100%.
It's the better one.
100%.
Yeah.
It's also the one that I did 2.5, well, it was 4.5 years before, at the or 3.5 years,
Ali
UK
Pally.
Tour at the Alexandra Palace. It's the last one I've done. So it was like, okay, let's do that.
And it's probably, I would say, probably one of the more like suited parts for you as well with your casting. So like...
This is the thing, actually. I think I remember I got some inside information when I went for the casting. Harry recommended me, and I was just checking in with him. And I remember hearing through him, not through my agent, through him, saying, yeah, they like you. They really like you, but they don't know where to place you. And that's kind of been my thing as an actor. It happened at drama school as well. I got sort of eclectic. I got like so like character actor, you know, Fred, do this because you can do it. And it was never you are this.
Yeah, we know you. This
exactly.
is you through and through.
And
yeah.
since doing, you know, associate on Pan and running auditions and things, and kind of in my life, it's kind of taken over my life that like I look at people as clowns, and like I look at people, where would you fit? Where would you
Are
you a Dennis? Are you a Max? Are you a Robert? Are you a Chris? And it's so funny. I know that I'm about to go to Latvia to do it.
Cool.
That I don't even need to see a cast list, that I would just walk in and be like, right, well, obviously you're Robert.
Yeah.
Well, obviously you're Sandra. Yeah. Well, obviously, you know, it's just so, it's so obvious to me. And so I don't know where I fit in terms of the clowns in that show.
In that show, yeah.
I think in Play That Goes Wrong, I'm fairly sure that I'm not a Jonathan. But it definitely isn't my. I can do it, and I did it, but it wasn't. It was slightly different.
That's the thing. You're right though about you is that it's like, well, Fred can definitely do it.
Do it, yeah.
But you probably have that thing. I've heard that. I've had that before where someone's like, oh, we know you can do it, but then the next person that walked in was the character.
Exactly.
It's like you are maybe skilled enough to make it work,
sure.
But actually then someone walked in who doesn't even have to make it work.
Exactly. And so for Max, I think I do have that side of me. I think I'm a bit of a child.
Sure.
And I've got a new, sort of new soul thing going on, and like things interest me, and I'm generally quite positive. So I do have a sort of Max energy about me, but I'm definitely too old for Max.
Well, we're all too old now.
No, but I look old. Like, I look old. I've always looked old. I've always looked old, and that's just one of my things. At school, I looked this age. So I'm doing better than I was when I was 16. So like, why is this 40-year-old man in our school year?
You did get this amazing laugh. Matt, one of Max's first lines is, I'm 4 years old. Yeah. And it did get a bigger laugh because you kept your full beard.
Big
You're
time.
Much taller than me. Sure. And I think Jonathan was on that day, or maybe it was actually Bartley that day.
Yeah.
And I think Jonathan and I had managed to hold on.
Yeah, you were on.
So it was really funny because obviously it just so happened that this year, you know, Matt Cavendish, who plays Max, is on the shorter side. I'm short, Jonathan's short. And then Jonathan's alternate when he was not there because he was doing My Mangler was Bartley, who was short. So we had this thing where the darling children actually were kind of well cast. Sure. And then you came on and you were such a giant.
Just an old, tall man. Yeah.
Like an old, tall man playing a four-year-old. And I think that really added to it. I think it was really
well, cool. In the first UK tour, it was all kind of different. It was Max who actually, it was Robert who played one of the...
Oh yeah, it all switched around.
And it was Cornelius Booth. Who grew his beard, and he looked so much older than he was. I mean, he looked like 60.
Mm.
And we had a whole thing where he was in the dance, and there was a line which is, we're young boys, Wendy, we love singing and dancing. It was after the dance, and just out of breath at the table. Yeah. And it was one of the, just in a pink baby grow.
There are some jokes you can get for free.
Absolutely. So you sort of lean on that, and that's fine. Similarly to like, you do not know what a real kiss is, when Max and Sandra have to kiss in the show. A little, you know, little look to the audience. Obviously, I do. I can't have got to this age.
Without, I know what it is, even if you haven't had one, I suppose.
Exactly.
Yeah, you would know.
Exactly. Whereas
is.
Matt Cavendish has this wonderful, youthful, and I think, you know, he'll be 60 and look.
He will. He's looked the same.
Exactly. Well. So, absolute dream. And, you know, I'm also, I just think like stories like that, the story itself. Like, I went on for four shows and that was it. And loved every single second of it because I knew it was going to end.
Yeah.
It's like, just that thing, that understudy in me is just like, it kind of has taken, since doing that job, doing other acting jobs, I know that things end. And I think when you do a long run with something, you kind of take it for granted that going out on stage, it just made me appreciate roles. It also made me value how hard everyone works apart from actors.
I know,
like,
right?
Like, it just makes how hard the crew work and how early they come in and what they're doing. And then actors come in and like, oh God, we've got like a call today at like 2. And it's like, yes, you do. What does that mean? You have to get out of bed at 12? Is that a problem? Do you know?
Yes, it is. It is a big problem for me, actually.
It just puts everything in perspective. So like, it just made me sort of understand theatre, specifically the show, but actors have it very easy, and that when you're in a job, to just like, don't complain.
That is a good one.
You know,
just
like,
really work out whether you need to complain about
it. It's
this.
That old is adage of something? Like, how do you make an actor complain? Give them a job.
Oh,
it's
I
like
know.
The old, it's just, and it's amazing. And so the idea of going, knowing that I was going to go on for four shows and four shows only, is that every single moment that happened, I was like, that's it. Especially on the last show, that's the last time, and it probably will be the last time I ever play Max. Like, I really do think, and that, well, that's how I think anyway.
Yeah.
Well, I hope for the show's sake that is the case.
Right, I see.
But like, I was just like, oh, this is so incredible. Mm. And I know it's sort of grass is always greener, and I imagine American actors coming over to England will be like, oh, the West End is the dream. But for me to go on in Broadway is like, it's like, pinch yourself stuff. And then like, I was out there with you guys for 10 weeks, and Adam left after I think 4, and I was there with you guys, and then Neil Patrick Harris came in, and they were like, well, Fred, you're gonna have to direct Neil Patrick Harris. I was like, what? And then Ellie Kemper. I was like, what is going on?
I know,
it's been an unbelievable year, like really, really weird. Always imposter syndrome, always just like, why am I here, what's this, what is this? But then always having to try and hide that.
Right, yeah, because you want everyone to feel safe with you.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
So you were talking about it earlier, actually, like how now that you've done so much directing and associate directing, how it changes your approach to acting. And someone said to me, oh, I wonder what it's like for him to take notes now. Do you think you take notes from directors as an actor differently? And do you approach your acting differently? Do you give, like, has it affected how you give notes being an actor? Knowing that you're an actor, does that influence how you give a note? Like, how has this affected doing both and having both hats? How does it affect each one? It's a big question.
Really good question. I think that in terms of directing, I feel that, and again, specific to this show, I feel that I think you have to adapt your notes to different people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the shit sack. Can you swear on this?
We can have a little swear. Yeah, have a little swear.
The shit sandwich,
yeah.
You know, sometimes you have to...
Oh, but I know it's happening when it's happening, and yet it is still
sure.
It does work.
But it's not. It doesn't mean that it's for the sake of it. It's you know, it's never just like you make up some good things to mask the thing you're trying to note.
Mm.
It's just that you need to make that person feel more secure than you would with another actor. You just go, just do this.
Yeah.
Because you feel that they're more secure in taking that note, and they just, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think you have to adapt, and I think that. I've learned that different actors need different mm-hmm. approaches mm-hmm. to notes. And then in terms of acting itself, it's similar to just how I view the crew and other than just the actors, is that I know what it's like to give a note to or see someone, an actor, receive a note and for them to be resistant to it. I don't feel like I've ever been that, because I like to try out new things. And it's also about trust. And that if I trust the director, and if I trust why would I, until I've tried something, and, then,
mm-hmm.
and if they're open to the conversation about it, if I really don't having, I just think it's about just always saying yes. It's yeah. always just like yeah, great, amazing,
yeah.
And then if like somehow there's a bit of a block later on, having tried it loads, mm-hmm. hopefully you'll be on the same page about that.
Yeah, or maybe you've just your interpretation of the note was actually just like, I've noticed this before. I've gone, I thought I knew what the note was, and then it turns out I'd actually slightly misinterpreted the
exactly.
note, and that's why we're not on the same page.
Well, that's exactly, and that's also the thing about what I've learned about directing as well, is that when I, you know, I've been with the UK tour every week and things, and I said to them in the last note session, when something's not working, in inverted commas, if something's not being, I very rarely blame the person doing it.
Yeah,
it's more like I haven't quite communicated properly what that moment needs, and something hasn't landed with you
mm-hmm.
With that particular note. So it's just about always checking in with how they've interpreted the direction.
We all come to the room with our own lenses on the world. So the word energy to one actor
right.
means different things to another actor.
Exactly.
Or the word, you know, like that's it. Yeah. And so you realize, oh, shoot, I said energy to that actor, and that created that response, and that was not what I meant.
Yeah, exactly.
So obviously I need to find the word that gets me what I'm
yes.
what I'm trying to get.
Yes, it's also I learned a lot from Adam in terms of giving space.
Mm-hmm.
I want to, when I see something that's, again, wrong, inverted commas, I want to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to fix it immediately, because I don't want it to be in the bodies of the actors or that it's learning something wrong, because then you have to undo that. And
it's
hard to do that sometimes. And I'll sometimes be sitting there with Adam and be like, that bit there, can we just have a little, and he's like, no, it's fine. And I'll be like, well, what do you mean it's fine? It's not fine. It's
mm-hmm.
fine. We have this chat, and then lo and behold, just through doing it, the it just irons itself out, and it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fine by itself, because the actors have found their way.
Oh, well. Yeah.
And like,
so trusting the actors
to trusting the actors to and making sure that actors don't feel claustrophobic about technical elements or comedic beats, and to let the show breathe and let the clowns breathe, and the sort of elements of the show to come forward, and not just sort of like barrage of notes, and especially if there's a note that's not quite landing with an actor. Sometimes I've given the same note about the same moment and you can see when you approach that and you go, and on that bit there, and you can see their head in the hands being like, I don't know,
I thought I was doing it, I'm trying
exactly, and it's like, okay, I'm not going to mention that for a while. Because it's not helping you, and it's making you feel weird about, maybe not just even that moment anymore. It's making you feel weird about your character and about you as an actor and as a person. And
it's like, such a fragile little thing, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
How powerful confidence is.
Absolutely.
And how, when someone's feeling confident as well, I know that when I'm feeling confident, I'm actually also able to take the notes more.
Right.
But when I'm feeling insecure, that's when I noticed myself being the most resistant, which is stupid because I should be like, oh my gosh, I'm feeling insecure, help me with your notes. Yes. But instead, because your ego's basically getting in the way, right?
Right.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
And then I notice that's happening, and then I'm really embarrassed that's happening. And so I really have to just go away for a while and calm the fuck down and just be like, stop making this more difficult than it used to be. I'm looking at your face and thinking, oh no, I'm giving you my code. It's fascinating hearing you talk about it, and I think there's such a benefit from the fact that you've done both, and you know the show inside out. I mean, someone asked me, does he just know the show off by heart? Do you think you could recite the show? Peter Pan Goes Wrong.
No, I couldn't. We've had a few understudy rehearsals where there's been a character missing, and I've like. I know the lines of the parts that I've covered.
Yeah.
I know them, but I couldn't play Sandra.
Oh, but you could.
I couldn't. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised.
Now tell me, if there was a part that you were playing, okay, seeing two parts to this question. Mm. Any part in the show, including the ones you've covered, what's your favourite? What's your favourite part, actually?
It's genuinely an impossible question. I think one of the strengths of the Goes Wrong brand and the Goes Wrong shows back to back, the characters that go from one to the other, and there's also Francis and Lucy in Peter Pan, are so well written and constructed, and they have their own journeys, particularly in Pan.
Mm.
There's an arc to every single part, and it's such an ensemble piece that I just think every part is a dream. I just think, like, it's I find Peter Pan so genuinely moving. It's got such a heartbeat running through it. And so, for example, you take a part like Lucy.
Yeah,
I'm not saying I would play Lucy, but it seems that it's a very hard part to play, because you've got this journey through the piece, we just sort of get battered through the show.
Hard, yeah.
And then at the end, she picks up a book and reads from it.
Yeah.
And she overcomes her stage fright, and loads of spoilers here. But she, it's just someone with a book reading a story, and it just strips away all the sort of artifice of theatre, and it just comes to the story that we all know and love, and the simplicity of that. Like corny of finish, they've done it.
Yeah.
Unlike Play That Goes Wrong, where things go wrong from start to finish.
And then
it's actually finished, and they achieve it. They do it. They get to the end.
Yeah.
And there's just a broken girl who's joyant and triumphant, having overcome her stage fright. And the snow's falling. And it, like, especially after the process of going through the casting and the rehearsals. Mm. And then you're finally there in front of an audience that have enjoyed themselves, and it's all worked for you. You have your journey with it matches the journey of Cornley, because there have been so many problems along the way,
right?
And then it's finally up, and it's and the words are being read again. It never fails, and that's why I never get bored of doing it. It's never like, here we go again. Yeah.
That's it. Well, yeah, because
why are you not bored?
Well, because you've done it even more than me. You know,
yeah, sure.
I know it in an eye search. Of course, I'm like helped to make it, and I know it very well in one way, but actually hours definitely nowhere near you. And I actually, you know, I don't know what it's like to direct the show. I don't know all the parts. I've only played one part, that kind of thing. And I'm like impressed that you're not bored. I mean, how do you feel Can you describe the feeling of, you know, I know what it's like to do a show, and I think people can imagine what it's like to be about to perform. But what's it like for a director to sit there, the audience coming in, and you know the show it's about to begin? Like, how do you feel watching the show?
Well, I think that based on the strength of the show itself, that once all the, because obviously it's Adam's show, the parts are all there. Mm-hmm. In terms of rehearsing it, it's about making sure those structures are in place. And once that's kind of there and you've cast it well, I'm never really nervous.
Mm-hmm.
I'm nervous sometimes if something doesn't happen that impacts safety you know, things like that. That makes me really nervous. But as the show's gone on, that's less and less and less of a problem. Also, the goes wrong thing has the goes wrong shield, which is when something goes wrong, the audience don't have a clue.
Mm-hmm.
And so it always has the people are like, oh, is that supposed to? No clue whatsoever. And so from an audience perspective, it never impacts their. I think rhythmically, things like we have a show stop, and you know, like we had a show stop a few weeks ago with the nursery, and it does impact you because you have to stop for 10 minutes, and the nursery particularly has it, and the show at large has a rhythm to it that's there for a reason. So if you break that up, the audience kind of then have to get on board. You have to get them back on board. It's like it makes everyone's job harder.
And they don't necessarily know that it's like not as good as it could have been.
Yeah,
we all know, there's this version
exactly,
where it's really
exactly
great,
because if something goes wrong for us, it's actually going right for the show.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, if the pyro doesn't go off, well, it wasn't supposed to go off.
Yeah,
in the goes right version. So just tell that's why it's always about coming back to truth and about like playing the story straight, so that you're not expecting the things to go wrong, because what is it if it's going right?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, from the audience perspective, it's it doesn't make a difference. And then it's just for me watching it for the first night or 6 weeks in or 6 months in, it's never finished. Like it's never, and that's why I love comedy. That's why I love Mischief, and I love Peter Pan, because it's never finished. There's always things to like, not quite, from night to night, and that's why it's always alive, because it's never sort of stayed and stuck, and it's like you can just always sort of mix it up and try new things and think about this and what's this, who do you look to when things go wrong? Like checking with things that when you're doing a long run, actors forget about this or go on auto mode, and then you just, that's why it's important to have someone checking in on it with an associate director, etc., to remind the actors of those sort of key principle things.
Yeah. Do you have a favourite moment? I mean, you talked about the Lucy moment at the end. Is there a moment that you just love every time it happens when you're watching it?
I love the second revolve. I love the second revolve.
The final, the chaos.
The chaos.
Yeah.
As it was.
Chaos revolve.
Said they called that on Broadway, didn't they? Called it the chaos. That's
amazing.
Chaos. And rightly so. It's something that takes ages to choreograph and get in, but people are seeing it for the first time, and it's that reaction. It's the first timers. It's the people. Obviously, you get fans coming to see it,
which is lovely. Thank you.
Which is
so
lovely,
much.
Of course. But people seeing it for the first time, there's nothing quite like it. It's like you have a theater that's packed out around the country or in America and Broadway, and people are seeing these things like I was with the bed drop moments.
Yeah,
I saw it at the Pleasance. It's like you can't recreate that. You can't, like, you're giving them that for the first time. And if you have all that joy and heart running through it as well, it's a genuinely wonderful experience. It's like, and you're giving that every time. And I think with the second revolve, it's a spectacle. It's like, it is really, really impressive. I mean, I'm looking at the things and go, okay, so it's quite off. It's a little bit off there. Is the nap in time? I'm thinking like that. But people seeing, it's just, as you say, chaos, choreographed chaos. It's just very, very hard to do. And I remember when we first did that with Adam Aguido in the room, it took like 3 days.
Oh, it takes such
3 days.
Time.
And then, you know, going to Broadway, everything's bigger, better. So we had to like just make Chris Bean's journey, sort of Buster Keaton running around the set.
Yeah, make it harder.
Make it harder.
Which I think Henry Shields is really grateful for. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, he wanted it.
He did. We always do.
Yeah, exactly.
That's our problem, I think.
Yeah.
A bit is that we do sometimes make the rods for our own backs. And we're like, actually, can I add this? And can
exactly.
I add this? And then
it's all about. And that's why it's never, because this UK tour version, I've, you know, it's because you're joining them. Coming back. And it's a sort of cross-contamination of UK tour and Broadway OGs coming together next week, rehearsals.
Me too.
So the directing of that is like, you know, I've tried to keep it, hopefully it is, to the sort of Broadway blocking for the UK tour, so it can be kind of seamless changeover with some people coming in and going out and stuff. But I'm just so excited once to see what those combinations bring.
Yeah,
that's why it's never boring, because it's always, I talk about me playing Jonathan and me playing Max, is that like me playing Max brought a different thing to your Sandra, and it's like you take one person out and put a new person in, and their interpretation of the clown, well, as long as the blocking and the staging is in place, it's all so malleable, and it's like, what's going to happen tonight?
Yeah.
You know, and so always exciting.
I'm very excited to work with the tour team. They are incredible. And if anyone can catch them, like, please do. And the saddest thing is that Kira Morris is playing Sandra on tour, and I love her so much. And I was like, oh no, by me coming in, I don't get to do it with her and we don't get to do it together.
Yeah.
But maybe we could. Can we just have like a double, like twin Sandras who just speak at exactly the same time?
Is that an official request?
I'm just putting it out there. Yeah. Okay. She's so brilliant.
I'll ask after this.
All right. I'm going to ask you a couple of like quicker questions, although don't feel like you have to be quick in your answer. Sure. One of them is, are you in an advert for Snug? Snug advert. Someone asked me,
For Snug. It's a very good advert, actually.
Yeah.
And I say Sandra in it, which is weird.
Ooh, meta.
But that was, this isn't a quick answer, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
When I got the audition through, it was shortly after my son was born. I was in Great Ormond Street, and because my son wasn't well.
Mm-hmm.
And I got this audition through saying, all you have to do for the self-tape is sit on a chair as if you're having an orgasm. And I was like, I couldn't be further away in my mind from that. So I was like, I'm not. I was like, sorry, agent, not going to happen. And Jamie was like, just send it. And I was like, fine. But sent it over and got a recall. And then I got it.
Brilliant.
Which just goes to show, don't overthink.
Yeah,
don't overthink. Just do it. Just, especially for adverts, it's like you're either right or you're not. And then I got it. And then my son was still in the hospital, so I had to spend a day in a house in London doing this shoot for Snug, doing basically that scene over and over again, where I sit on this. It's so comfortable that you sort of are in a state of paralyzed with euphoria. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And had a really weird day, because then I finished that and just went straight back to
the hospital.
So that's, yeah. It reminds me, because I also look terrible in the advert, which is where I was fine, absolutely fine. And then, but at the moment, I'm also in a Sky advert.
Oh, amazing!
Where I play a giant.
A giant, of course you do.
I play a giant. I've got the ears. They'd let me take the ears with me, and yeah, that was in Turkey. That was years.
You still got the ears.
Still got the ears. Yeah.
Can I say his name? Son.
Yeah, Dylan.
Does Dylan like the ears?
Dylan loves the ears. Yeah, and when he sees it on, because it's often on like. It's on Sky, so when we're watching football and stuff,
yeah,
and
right.
He's in the adverts, and he's like, "Daddy," so he sees me as a giant.
Actually, right. Screw the quick questions. This is more interesting. How, like, you are a dad. You're a working dad in this industry, and I do think sometimes we ask women what that's like a lot, to be working mums in the industry, but we don't actually ask guys for various different reasons. So I have no experience of it. So my question is probably going to be a little vague. How are you finding it?
Amazing.
I mean, you love being a dad, obviously, and Dylan is a treasure.
Yeah, love being a dad. It's the best thing I've ever done. And in terms of, yeah, you know, Jamie, my wife, is an actor as well,
and she's in the UK tour.
She's in the UK tour, yeah, exactly.
And she will be on the West End. She plays Annie. She's excellent.
That's right. Yeah. So she's sharing the part with Nancy.
Yeah.
And basically, since Dylan's been born, she's been nonstop. Non-stop working.
Yeah.
When she was in Grown Ups. So when he came out of hospital, we went on tour with Grown Ups, and
yeah.
So we were sort of carting Dylan around with us, and it's just about compromise in terms of the two of us, in terms of any working actor, director, any creative person. I just think that with their partner, especially if both of you are, there's just like. You know, Jamie gets to work.
Mm-hmm.
Jamie gets to go on stage and do her thing. And that's wonderful. And that's something I miss out on because we can't both do that at the same time. We'd like right. tours, and you know, I've been very lucky because I've had little snippets that, like, I've had like a month here, and Jamie's mum's been amazing at childcare and stuff, which is something you need to think about. But she misses out on the sometimes, you know, the first first time for the, especially these, he does the things for the first time, and the first, and that's, I think that's a sacrifice that she has to make on the other side, is that I sort of miss out on the work stuff and the joy of rehearsals and going on stage and, you know, all that stuff, and especially doing a comedy, you get that daily affirmation and stuff, and I did miss that, but you know, she makes sacrifices on the other side, and it's I didn't think we could do it. I think it would be I thought it would be a question of one of us having to give up, and obviously he's turning 3 in January, and that might happen at some point in terms of compromise, but it never feels like a loss. It never feels like you're missing out on something, but what you're gaining is surely more important. And I've just like absolutely loved it. I just like I think that Mischief have been very good. Kelly Wax has been very good at supporting that sort of thing,
good.
In terms of like supporting childcare and all that sort of stuff. And also, just like he's such a social little man.
Yeah, like, he is adorable.
Touring the country, he came to Broadway as well. And he just like, he's sort of immersed in the world without knowing it. In fact, he saw Peter Pan Goes Wrong in Aylesbury, and he sort of watched it, and I was like, is he? And he's smiling, he's like, oh, there's mummy and stuff. And then like 2 or 3 days later, he just started clapping and saying, I believe in fairies. I was like, what's happening?
Oh.
And then I didn't, and then he also got these little llama toys. And I said, oh, what are they called? And he said, that's Robert, that's Chris, that's Dennis. And I was like, are you a genius? Because what?
He's a genius.
He's a genius. This is like weeks after. And they can't have been random names, because I don't know when he would have heard the name Dennis before. Chris and Robert, you could kind of hear that walking on the street. Dennis is quite a unique name.
Yeah.
But he was naming these llamas after parts in the play.
And but not Peter and Wendy and Tinkerbell.
No. But then he knows Captain Hook. He knows, like, and he always says, Mummy's going, because when Mummy goes away for the next venue, he says, bye, Mummy. Mummy's going to the stage to be Tinkerbell.
And so he really understands that.
He understands it. And then he says, I believe in fairies. And he said, and then Mummy wakes up.
Oh.
And that's, of course, what happens.
I suppose it's amazing you don't realise how much they do take in and take on.
Absolutely.
How sort of spongy their brains are, and how you, as well, we've got to be careful with them as well, and mindful, take care of them, but also, give them joy and magic.
Absolutely, which is again, coming back to why I never get bored, which is what is always the forefront of it. There's heart. And there's magic, and there's like, obviously Peter Pan is all about sort of, you know, never growing up and like discovering the world and learning about the world, and that and the fact that he took in so much. Obviously there's like, I think it's what, 5 and above is the sort of suggested age.
I mean, it's up to you.
It was quite a quiet audience for Aylesbury that time.
Really,
so I'll try it, and if he's too, I'll just get out. I'll just
well,
out.
That's it.
He just watched, captivated the whole time, and there's just so much there. There's just so much there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really cool. And thanks for sharing that experience, because I think it's something that a lot of people are going through, and we don't always discuss it because we're so excited to talk about the work, which is great, but how it's all part of the great experience, you know, and we can't, it's a funny phrase, but we can't actually have it all, because literally the physics won't allow us to do 5 things at once.
No.
But it's okay to sometimes do this and then sometimes choose that. But generally, you know, you and Jamie have such a great dynamic, and you're generous with each other, and then, you know, obviously very committed to your child. So
yeah, there hasn't been a situation where someone has had to. We've always been able to do everything that we wanted.
Yeah,
there's never been a thing of like, okay, there's 2 offers on the table, one for you, one for me. Who's going to go for it? It's always been a way. Again, especially because of Jamie's mum, how amazing she's been. It's like, you know, I had to go out to New York for 10 weeks.
Yeah,
Jamie was working at the time. Was in a show. And Jamie's mum was like, you need to go, so I'll be there.
Yeah.
I did a 10-week stint, like, looking after Dylan. And, we couldn't do it without her. I mean, obviously, I imagine different couples have different problems with childcare and stuff. It is a thing. Otherwise, your child is just by themselves.
Yeah, shouldn't do that.
No.
I've heard.
Yes.
As
this is a podcast, it's very important to emphasize.
To say that.
Don't leave your children
just
by themselves. Just don't leave them.
Just don't leave them by themselves, sure.
Full stop.
Yeah.
Please. Because like when I'm there, sometimes someone's like, someone will go, "Where's Dylan?" It's like, come on. Like, you know,
oh my God, you know. I forgot.
Exactly.
Oh, Dylan. Yes. You know what? I just left him. I just left him in
he's
the kitchen.
Fine. He is
with
very
the
resourceful.
Knives.
He's very resourceful. He would be fine. But yeah. No.
Oh, that's so fascinating. Thank you. I feel like I've got, I mean, we could just talk for hours and hours, and I would love to do that with you. But I, at some point we just have to stop.
Of course, I know. I understand.
I like the show itself. But I've got a quick couple ones. You know, give us your go. What's a classic Fred Gray note? Or do you find yourself like this is a phrase or a thing I go to a lot?
The best note that I've ever been given as an actor is make everyone else look good.
Yeah,
it's like it's just gold for mm-hmm. me, because if everyone's doing that, everyone looks great. And it's only when you get, and this wouldn't pass, you know, we wouldn't stand for it if it happened on this show or any other show, of like someone stealing focus or doing
anything.
You know, it's like that doesn't happen when the audience sees it. But it certainly happens sometimes in rehearsals
where
people are trying something out and it's like, well, actually this moment's about this and you're drawing, I'm looking at you when I should be looking here.
And it's not that that wasn't funny or that you're not talented.
It's funny
it's
in the wrong way.
It's just not, we've got to think of the whole show.
Exactly. And don't think about yourself and don't be self-serving. And generally, with casting the people that Mischief employ, that doesn't really happen. You don't really get that. But that's if everyone's thinking about serving the other person in front of them and making them look good. It's a classic thing. If you make a joke and the person in front of you on stage wasn't to laugh, you wouldn't look funny. Do you know what I mean? It's about how you frame what the other person is doing. If someone's trying to scare you and there's not a thing on your face, they look stupid. They don't,
right.
You know. Whereas if you act shocked, then they've you've made them look good.
Right.
And exactly. successful in their action or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
it's such a team game.
Exactly. So that would be my best like note, is that make everyone else look good.
Yeah, that's quite an improv thing as well. It helps you get out of your head when you're on stage. If you're like worried about what you're doing, like don't get out of your head.
Absolutely.
And just focus on the other person.
Yeah, I did the improv, because I haven't done much improvisation like in a sort of cold, hard sense. I've done improvisation around a show or like, whatever, but I did the improvathon. With you, I did the full 50 hours with Anna Megiddo. You came for a few. You came.
Yeah,
for
I did the
a
first
block
10.
Of episodes, and then you kept. You came back, didn't you?
Did
you?
I don't know if I did actually. I think I was going to, but I mean, you know, you would have been very tired.
I think you came back. Maybe
I don't think I did.
You, oh God. Anyway, it
you
was so
me.
It was so new to me, and I remember the first like 10-12 hours, I was in hell. Like I was like. I was so consumed with wanting to be interesting and funny and I just sort of self-combusted. I was just like, and I came to Adam and I said, listen, I'm going to go because I can't. He was like, okay. The classic Adam McGee. And I was like, what do you mean, okay? And he was like, well, you'll regret it. I know you. You're going to go home and you're going to regret leaving.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, right. What I'm going to do. I say, no, it wasn't 12 hours, it was like 6 hours, which is a long time to be like. So I took an episode off.
Yeah, lovely.
And I changed my costume and I changed my character. The first one I played was called Owen Bucks, and he was returning to the town. It was a Western.
I remember.
And he was like really like troubled, and he was trying to come back to recoup debts and say something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was just like, it was just such a heavy.
Ah.
So I was just like, and also because Adam's directing it, it's like you're coming back to plot lines that are interesting, and mine just wasn't. So I came back with a guy, I can't remember what his name was now, but he was a locksmith. He was a town locksmith. He was just really, he was kind of talking about energy, he's a max, kind of really open, and just was interested in other people.
Yeah.
He was just learning about the town, so he'd go and fix their locks, but he'd be talking to them, and it wouldn't be about him. And as soon as I did that, I like had two wives, like I proposed to two women in the next till the end. I had like a bromance with a guy. Like I like we shot a Western film in that. Like it was just I found myself walking on stage. Obviously, sleep deprivation is a thing, but like I found myself going up on stage and improvising songs, because obviously it's got this live score underneath it and stuff. And someone was singing, and I just went, I'm doing it. Got up and, but that's I've never done anything like that, and it was so freeing, and it was all about being present with the person in front of you,
right?
And just not worrying about yourself. Stop it. Just stop.
Oh my goodness! If I could give a piece of advice for life, I think we could all do that a bit more.
Makes it about the other person.
Yeah.
It's just so much more interesting. It's so much more interesting.
Okay, who in the cast, Broadway cast, was the troublemaker?
Whoa!
I know, but quick, off the top of your head, who's the troublemaker?
The troublemaker.
Matt Cavendish.
Yeah,
obviously it's Matt Cavendish.
You're all troublemakers, though.
Yeah.
All troublemakers. That's why it's a success. It's a success.
Because you're all troublemakers. Who's the teacher's pet?
Teacher's pet is Charlie Russell.
Is it me? You don't have to say it's me, but when I wrote this down, I thought, maybe I shouldn't ask this question. Who's teacher's pet?
I don't think you're teacher's pet.
Great.
I don't think you're teacher's pet. No, because teacher's pet, you have to do a lot of like kissing ass.
Oh, yeah.
I think. That's why I associate a teacher's pet. And you don't do that.
Okay. Does anybody do that?
You're nice.
Thanks.
Of course.
Cheers.
But you don't do any of that sort of like, when you receive a note, you're very thoughtful. You like receive it and you're like, okay, right. Yes.
I'm trying to work out if I've understood it.
Exactly. But it's not a default position of like, you're amazing. Brilliant. You get that sometimes.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone, maybe Matt Cavendish again. Maybe he's the sort of.
Well, because he's this like lovable rogue, isn't he?
Exactly. That's it. Exactly. So he breaks the rules. He causes so many problems. Which we don't have time to talk about.
Oh my gosh, there could be a whole podcast.
So many. He's very funny to make corpse.
He tries to make me laugh exactly. all the time.
Of course he does. Of course.
It's so difficult.
Yeah, but at the same time, he's a teacher's pet. He'll never openly disagree or like he'll just be like.
No, he'll never cause a problem. He'll never be late. He'll always be up for trying something. You're so right.
But that's why it's under the radar. He's causing problems without being seen, and that's why he needs to be out.
Yeah. Get rid.
Get him out. Because, I mean, it's not too late. We start rehearsals on Wednesday. But there are other Maxes available. We don't need to have him.
Oh, finally, we found our allies in, sabotaging
perfect.
Matt Cavendish.
And I just said, actually, I feel this is what, it's everything's written in the stars. We were talking about me playing Max and about when I'm going to do it again, la la la. Now we're talking about Matt not needing to be in the show.
Yeah.
So easily, I can shave the beard. I can shave it off. I can come in and do it. No worries.
Awesome.
I know the lines.
You do?
I know the lines. I'll put it to the office as well.
Okay, cool. We'll do that from now on.
Sorry, Matt, if this is the first time you're listening, hearing about this, sorry.
This is why you got fired.
Yes.
Just so you know, it's down to us.
Stop breaking the rules and stop undermining the show.
Stop trying to make me laugh, Matt.
Presenting yourself as a professional.
Yeah, please.
It's disgusting.
Well, this is definitely...
Perfect.
Oh, yeah, excellent. Well done. And seriously, though, thank you very much for coming on the show. It's been brilliant talking to you and hearing... all the different perspectives and your experience of the show and your experience as a director and an actor and a working dad. Thank you so much.
Of course. Well, I asked you before, what you were interviewed for this.
Yeah, I think I was interviewed a long time ago, maybe 2020 during the lockdown.
I just feel that I want to sort of revert. Obviously not now. I'm not, we've got to finish. But I feel that people might want to hear you.
Me?
More. Yeah. So I think if that does exist, then great. But like,
maybe
have someone interview you. I mean, I'm happy to do it.
Thanks.
Absolutely.
I feel like, in a way, I sort of sneak myself in because doing the interviews, I'm not in just asking questions.
Sure.
So I'm like, oh, it makes me think of this. So I feel like I'm just constantly under the radar, Matt Cavendish, under the radar, sneaking myself into other people's conversations.
Just more explicit. I just think... Get yourself an interview.
All right.
Interview yourself.
Interview myself. I don't think I can think of anything I would love more.
Why not?
I think because that's bizarre.
It's really weird. But what a great setting. But how many people would tune into that?
I don't think anyone.
Oh.
Who wants to hear me interview myself? All right, we've got to shut up now. Thank you all so much for listening to the Mischief Makers podcast. There will be more episodes, of course. There are more episodes you can listen to. Where you found this podcast is where you can find the other episodes. And you've got mischiefcomedy.com where you can find out all information about mischief, mischiefy things and the mischief people. Thanks again, Fred, and I'll see you on Wednesday.
Big time. And Lyric Theatre for a 7-week run at the in the West End, and then it's out again on the UK tour, which will have some of the people in who are in the West End. But please check out the UK tour as well.
Oh my gosh, they're amazing!
They are unbelievable. And as I said, it's always a different show to watch because people bring different things to the parts, and they're definitely worth a watch.
Oh, they're so great!
As well. They're incredible. I'm incredibly proud of every one of you if you're listening as well. Okay.
See ya.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.